taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning. Welcome to Spoken Word on 3CR. I'm Tina Janoukas. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and present. Today on the program, I have poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos. Apart from his extensive philosophical writings and his lecturing in philosophy at La Trobe University, George has published several collections of poetry in Greek. His most recent collection, and the one we'll be talking about today, is Ash Poems, published in English by Repress. What is remarkable about aspects of George's body of work is the way his work engages us both philosophically and aesthetically. His poems are sensual yet philosophical, and his philosophy can echo with the feeling of poetry, especially in his philosophical work, Monumental Fragments, to which we'll also be referring today. Welcome to the program, George.
Thanks, Tina. Thanks for the invitation and your warm welcoming.
Thank you, George. George, I've had the pleasure over the past few weeks of reading both your poetry in Greek and in English, and your ruminations on the relationship between poetry and philosophy. The immense challenge for me has been coming to terms with the way your poetry in some ways mirrors your philosophy, or one could say your philosophy mirrors your poetry. There is some relationship between the two. Your philosophy is disruptive, and your poetry can seem or seems axiomatic of that. In Monumental Fragments, one of your philosophical works, you write, between poetry and philosophy, there is the fragment. Would you read the opening poem of Ash Poems and tell listeners about the relationship between your poetry and your philosophical thought?
Thanks, Dina. Not the easiest thing to do, of course. You come to me a couple of breaths away. I can hear them in my mouth, gasping your arrival. You exercise God with the smell of love, you say, filling me with your whispering, emptying me into galaxies of floating glories. We are still far from the stone the poet brought us to measure the earth rolling it.
I find that a very mysterious poem, George. You use words there like love and so on, words that are also important in philosophy. So I really would like to open this up for discussion.
Yes. When I read my poems, I have already forgotten that I have written them. So I almost read them like a stranger. And I feel comfortable with them when they generate a sense of fear in me. A sense of fear because I tend to believe that what we can call the human condition is always on the edge. And somehow poetry, but even philosophy or genuine politics, opens up the surrounding abyss of this edge. So in this poem in particular, I have the sense that I operate occupying two positions in two different, what I can call, erotic fields. One field is that one which is determined by what we can refer to as the gathering of the two, being in a love relationship with someone. Not necessarily the two, maybe more than the two, but the principle can be articulated through the encounter of the two. In this kind of relation, I feel I have the sense of myself as necessary to the relation, which basically means that the erotic field in the gathering of the two has two sides, one positive and perhaps the other is negative. The positive is this immersing yourself into the relating, almost losing yourself into the relating, coming back to yourself through the other. There is an element of passivity there. This kind of relating just captures you, so to speak. But on the other hand, there is an element of extreme, if you like, or potentially extreme action, activity. And this is the power you feel that you have in destroying the relation. Because in the gathering of the two, the erotic gathering of the two, both sides are present, this kind of field is both, as I said before, positive and negative. You can immerse yourself to it, but you have the power to destroy it. Death comes into this picture, and I can explain what death means. But before I do that, I will refer to this second field of encountering others, the impersonal, what I call in my work, the impersonal gathering, the gathering of us all, if you like.
This is in your philosophical work.
It is in a philosophical work, yeah. But in a sense, I follow, in particular, a Greek poem, Yannis Ritsos. He wrote a beautiful poem, The Meaning of Simplicity, and in that he says, every word is a doorway to a gathering, one often cancelled. And that's when a word is true, when it insists on the gathering. From my perspective, and Yannis Ritsos was politically active in the left, this is the impersonal gathering, this kind of power to find ourselves gathered in the gathering. What is the significance of this? If you have the sense of being gathered in this impersonal gathering, then you have a deep sense of your contingency. You experience this kind of togetherness distributing itself, so to speak, in an erotic kind of manner to all the members by addressing our contingency. So in the gathering of the two, I have the sense of my necessity, because without me, the particular gathering of the two would no longer operate. On the other sense, through certain kinds of political experience, I have the sense of being gathered in this impersonal gathering where my contingency is affirmed. So the poem becomes almost this oscillating movement between two dimensions of my being. And I guess this is expressed in this particular poem. In the first part, I talk about the specific you. You come to me a couple of breaths away, which is the part of the gathering of the two. And in the last section of the poem, I refer to this immense task of measuring everything, so to speak, through the impersonal gathering of togetherness, which is another form of the erotic kind of bonding. But in both expressions or experiences of being, a certain sense of death emerges. I can elaborate on this.
Well, why don't you read another poem that kind of elaborates on that?
Death, let me see. Okay, I'll read the second poem. How can I recite you a poem made from ashes? I wrote it with my finger, surfing on the soft silence. Thy fell from the sky. Perhaps it was the afternoon light burning, or human skin and bones. How can the poet tell? I curved my palm to give a place to the dark, tiny crystals. Words magically appeared, little ash memories. So in the first poem, the one I read before, I refer to the stone the poet brings us. And of course, the stone is very heavy and lifeless. This is the lifelessness and the heaviness of death, both personal and impersonal. And in this poem, I refer to the ashes. That's why I call them ash poems. And implicitly, I suggest that the material of the poet is ashes, basically. And ashes is the field of history. History is this amazing capacity of the humankind to produce ashes.
And this is a theme that runs through the 20th century, though, isn't it?
Of course it is. Mm. Of course it is.
With poets like Celan and so forth.
Of course, of course. My inspiration comes mainly from the sense of death I detect, if you like, in philosophers, in my opinion, the most important philosopher in this tradition, modern philosopher, is Hegel. But even if we go back in the Western canon to the ancient Greek philosophers, the first philosophers, we see that, for example, Heraclitus writes, produces his thought out of a deep sense of the death of the gathering of the city. And the same happens with Plato. So they had a deep sense of impersonal death. Plato experiences the death of the philosopher, Socrates, the justice man, who tries to gather, if you like, around him the Athenian gathering as a gathering of justice. And, of course, he dies. And at the same time, Plato experiences the collapse of the gathering, this impersonal death, which has cosmic dimensions. Someone like Hegel experiences the collapse of the erotic gathering through the collapse of the French Revolution. And of course, as you said, Celan, or many Greek poets, especially after the Second War and the Civil War, at least implicitly, death becomes a really important dimension of the poetics. Yeah.
You mentioned Plato before. In Western thought, we've inherited from Plato, some 2,500 years ago, the idea of an ancient quarrel between poetry and philosophy. For me, both are defining reality, seeming to define reality, but in different ways. Now, reading Ash poems, it struck me exactly how philosophy tries to separate itself from poetry, especially where poetry moves from the lyrical moment into the abstract and the universal. In Monumental Fragments, you write, and I quote from it, "Poets leave the world forever. Philosophers perpetually return." Could you read "Give Me Back to My Name" and speak to how you see this tension between poetry and philosophy, even in your own work?
Okay. "Give me back to my name, so it no longer feels an orphan of sounds. Then say it again, with the ancient voice waiting to be whispered in the crevices of the silence. In the morning, unborn children greet us with the passions of the poem." In the last section of the poem, I guess, "In the morning, unborn children greet us with the passions of the poem," there is this kind of deep desire for poetry, or how I relate to poetry, to create a kind of vision. Okay? There is something there that basically comes from the future and perpetually greets us. This something, in my poetry, but also in my philosophy, is the unconditional gathering, being together with everybody unconditionally. So there is this deep sense to create a vision. But in the first part, which again refers to the gathering of the two, there is this kind of deep sense of, if you like, death through the experience of words being dead. When words become dead, then basically the poet becomes the whisperer of dead words. And the hope is through this kind of whispering to somehow reactivate a language of hope and vision. But when words become dead, they break up. They break up into their individual sounds. And they break up by falling into what? They fall into language. So the sounds they make is they're falling as dead, and the dispersing into sounds they make by falling into language, so to speak. So the poet finds himself, herself, themselves, just making the sounds of words that break up, and through those sounds trying to, if you like, speak to language. Instead of speaking through words about something, the world, or our dwelling in the world, we speak to language itself through the breaking up of words. If someone is overwhelmed by this kind of experience, then the question becomes, is it possible to write a poem? Is it possible any longer to write a poem? So you start being preoccupied with the impossible poem, if you like, and you keep writing the impossible poem by the sounds words making as they fall into language. So in a sense, I write, so to speak, the poem by activating the impossible poem, by oscillating between the two gatherings, the personal gathering of the two and the impersonal gathering of us all, if you like. So in a sense, from both these perspectives, which desperately the poem tries to make them connect, the I, although I use the I in my poems, the I is a count of the sound of, if you like, the we. The poem is written by keep saying we. Or in other words, when we write the poem, although different words are a connection, a gathering, a set of sounds, and we have particular sounds making up words, the we that we somehow silently say that accompanies the words is the pure sounding. It's a pure sounding. The togetherness is a pure sounding in a cosmic void. In other words, there is no meaning beyond us. So this pure sounding is what the particular sounds of words refer to. So I take the word or a constellation of words, I treat them as dead, perhaps meaningless. I have no words to speak with. And then slowly I move to the sounds making up words, and then to the pure sound that I fall in, which is the sounding of language itself, which simply the sounding of our ability to say we, to open a field of gathering for us all, which is a kind of erotic field. But because that's not present, this kind of gathering generates a sense of death. In other words, the gatherings that surround us today, not just today, you know, in modern history, basically, are gatherings that do not call us, if you like. But the poem, in my opinion, tries to tell us that the gathering is calling us. And this call comes from the future, you know, the vision. And then the poem tries to convince the poet, and by extension, convince humanity that there is a calling for us all being together, so to speak, in this kind of erotic sense.
3CR is one of a kind. We have 400 volunteers and cover an incredible array of programming content.
From special broadcast events on Invasion Day or Trans Day of Visibility to any of our 120 weekly shows, 3CR has got your radical radio listening covered.
Subscribe to 3CR at 3cr.org.au and support independent, community-owned media, free of commercial influence and government bias.
Help to keep 3CR unique by becoming a subscriber today.
Welcome back. I'm Tina Chinoukas, and you're listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I'm speaking with poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos about his latest collection of poetry, Ash Poems, published in English by Repress. In this two-part interview, I'm exploring with George how his poetry and philosophy intertwine. When I was reading through Ash Poems,
yep,
I did wonder how we are meant to read the collection. You've partly answered this question. There are no page numbers, and the poems are not individually titled, which is something common, actually, in your Greek works as well, your Greek poems, your poetry collections. Do you see Ash Poems as one long, continuous poem made up of fragments, fragments of feeling, the lyrical moment, fragments of thought, the philosophical moment, or are the poems themselves fragments of some larger whole that cannot now be recuperated? I'd like you to read I Am Me, Stuttering the Elsewhere in You, and tell us how you see the collection of Ash Poems as a collection of poetry.
Yeah. I Am Me, Stuttering the Elsewhere in You. It arrives uninvited. No poet knows when or how. It lands in the crevice of my lips, a darkness my voice. I am the last prayer of the forgotten tribe. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful poem.
Very often reading my poems, the Greek ones and now the English, from a distance. And a distance for me is, you know, the next day I have completed the collection, so to speak, and put it aside. The next day is a long distance. And I have this feeling of strangeness. I get again the sense that for a very long time now, I just keep writing the same poem. Now, why? How can I explain this? And this poem relates to what I'm going to say. Well, I begin, so to speak, or I start from this kind of very strange and sometimes frightening sense of the whole. What is the whole here? The whole is the constellation of very simple elements. The erotic element between the two, the erotic element of Ritsos's gathering, the gathering of us all, and the void, the cosmic indifference, if you like. So, to put it almost axiomatically, we are gathered in the gathering, floating in the void. Because we gather, we are as gathered in the gathering, floating in the void. In a sense, the gathering calls upon us to become gatherers, if you like. To become a gatherer means to offer a place or to offer yourself a place for everything. Not only humanity, but everything in, you know, the cosmic horizon. Now, perhaps humanity is defined in all its different versions with this deep sense of being gathered and becoming gatherers. For example, the Homeric poems. That was the gathering story of the Greeks. And when we move to philosophy, Plato in particular, we have another kind of version, if you like, another kind of sense of the gathering. Plato, in my opinion, that's of course my opinion, Plato senses the demise, the collapse, the death of the communal spirit of the Greek polis, and by extension, the death of poetry itself as the gathering story of the community. So poetry dies when the world itself dies. In the death of the poetic word, the philosophical concept is born. So the philosophical concept is born out of death, the death of the gathering, this erotic togetherness, and the death of the poetic word as the story of the gathering, which is a cosmic story. It even gathers with gods. Right? So the concept already, if it can be activated, operates in its visionary spaces. What does this mean? Poetry collapses with the death of a world. Philosophy is activated in this death and tries to reimagine the world. And the hope is that through this kind of activity, let's call it thinking, another world can be reactivated. Okay? So from this perspective, poetry and philosophy have a common space, which is this ability of death. But if human gatherings, smaller or bigger, are gatherings that produce cosmic stories of, you know, making sense or whatever, enact the whole in themselves by being part of the whole, and gatherings, impersonal gatherings, can die, this means that the whole itself can die. So poetry, and to a certain extent philosophy, and that's how, in my opinion, they both communicate, recognize the death of the whole. Now, the death of the whole, which is expressed in words themselves becoming dead, basically, is fragmentary. It produces fragments. But at the same time, death is a sense of the whole. So in my poetry, I think what somehow motivates me and overwhelms me very often is that each particular point repeats the whole, simply because each particular point is fused with this kind of erotic sense of death. It's a kind of thanatology. And what the poet can do is not recreate the whole, but simply repeat it.
This gets expressed, of course, in your poetry through recursive images.
Yeah. The aim of repetition, from my perspective, if again you think of the poem not as widening language, but if you like, bringing words back to language and thus creating very small fields of intensity as the words fall into language and break up into sounds, then what you're trying to create is create intensity, or if you like, open up yourself to the intensity of death with this great hope that poetic language can recreate a kind of vision and moves us to the other side, if you like, recreate this kind of hope. But recreating hope must take into account that humanity is always in the edge. Humanity, given its cosmic situatedness and its opening to the cosmos, a cosmos without God, I should add, is always an extreme kind of situation. And the challenge of poetry, from my perspective, and philosophy, is to try to find the strength to open yourself to this extremity, which, of course, can, I don't know, annihilate you, so to speak.
Are you trying, then, by not giving titles to the poems, by not numbering the pages, by a reading experience which immerses you into a flow of words? Is this what you're trying to do?
Yes. So you look at the poem is surrounded by the emptiness of the page, basically. This emptiness is created not by breathing words out, but by breathing words in. So you try to create a minimalism of some kind by getting rid of words that cannot withstand the intensity of bringing them back in, let's say, language. Okay? And because you breathe in words, you take them back, you have this emptiness of the page. But at the same time, the poem, in facing this emptiness, has this kind of desire to fill in the page again, if you like, to create the utopian element of hope, the utopian element that would take us beyond historical kind of violence. That is why even, Tina, you refer to the fragments. The title is Monumental Fragments. Each fragment, and many of those fragments are a couple of sentences, I wanted them to operate as the bearers of death, and death, like love, is holistic. And somehow one should be able to negotiate, so to speak, if I can use this expression, between the two, the burden of the whole.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, Tina. Thank you very much.
I'm Tina Chanoukas. You've been listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I've been speaking with poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos about his latest collection of poetry, Ash Poems, published in English by Repress. You've been listening to the first part of our two-part discussion on how poetry and philosophy meet in George's work. We'll continue our discussion next month, so please join us then. George Vassilakopoulos' Ash Poems is available online. Spoken Word broadcasts every Thursday at 9 a.m. on 855 a.m. or you can download the podcast. Thank you for listening.